Eagles of the Damned by David Black. Forward. Rome's legions appeared invincible. For hundreds of years in distant lands across countless battlefields, the fighting legions won victory after victory, often against seemingly overwhelming odds. The armies of Rome conquered as they marched, gradually carving out a huge empire. Few in the known world could stand against the superbly trained and equipped soldiers of the legions. They were rightly feared and respected by any who dared stand against them. During one dark chapter, however, the aura of Roman supremacy was shattered forever, when three of its most powerful and experienced legions, totaling over 20,000 men, were systematically and ruthlessly annihilated during 72 hours of unimaginable terror and unrelenting butchery. They were mercilessly slaughtered within a vast tract of dark and foreboding forest called the Teutoburgwald, on the northern rim of the empire. Little could they have imagined that their fate had been irrevocably sealed by their own Roman system of provincial governance, and one man's overwhelming thirst for vengeance, and his ruthless craving for his people's freedom from the heartless tyranny of Imperial Rome. When the massacre was over, the silent Teutoburg in Jamaia Inferior became a somber graveyard filled with scattered bones. In the long months that followed, as thousands of legionaries' remains bleached and weathered on lonely paths deep in the forest, the lost legions became an enduring symbol of Roman arrogance, overconfidence and critically misplaced trust. This is their story. Chapter 1. Part 1. 8 BC. Jamaia. Freezing winds blew from the east, tightening winter's icy grip on the shattered Chirusai settlement. Flurries of snow carried on howling winds spiraled and swirled through the charred frameworks and drifted slowly across the lonely heath which surrounded them. Icicles hung from jagged timbers, a mantle of shining ice glistened on the blackened remains. Paraded in a square around the remains of the settlement, their warm breath turning instantly to clouds of steam, four cohorts of Roman infantry stood at attention. Protected within the vast hollow square by the first cohort was the physical and spiritual heart of the 19th Legion. Their golden eagle, touched by the Emperor's divine hand, was proudly displayed before them by the standard bearer. It was the unique symbol of the Legion, representing the honor, courage and character of the 19th. The eagle was adored and revered by the men who had sworn to protect it with their lives. Where the Imperial talisman went, the Legion followed. Beneath leaded skies inside the ring of Roman steel, fresh snowflakes settled silently on the charred huts, fired when the settlement had been overrun 7 weeks earlier. Not all were destroyed in the chaos and killing which ensued, but many had felt the burning kiss of the pillaging legionaries' torches as the Chirusai community was sacked. Inside the settlement's blackened remains, the helmets and cloaks of the general's mounted escort, arranged into a wide arc around their commander, were also turning white under the fresh fall of snow. The menace of the spears gripped by the armored horsemen was stark, their deadly threat clear in the hooded eyes of the prisoners who stood shivering before them. Separated and shoved roughly to his knees by grinning auxiliaries, the defeated leader of the Chirusai people hung his head in resignation and despair. Scowling armored soldiers flanked him, long cavalry swords gripped firmly in their hands. Fighting against the bitter cold, the chieftain tried desperately not to shiver. What little pride remained demanded that the Romans not think him afraid when the end came. Like his face, the animal skins he wore were soiled with grime and filth. His long hair hung lank and matted around his cold, pinched face. He closed his eyes and mumbled a short prayer, begging forgiveness from the cruel gods of the forest for his failure in battle against the Romans. Vanquished by the invaders, the Chirusai king had lost everything. Position, lands and his most treasured prize of all, the freedom of his people. Many of his bravest warriors were dead, their corpses already picked clean where they fell weeks earlier by hungry bears and wolves. Others were Roman prisoners, torn from the land of their ancestors, driven far away into a life of slavery. Surrounded by the same freezing winds, his wife and children huddled miserably behind him, manacled in cold iron chains like their humbled chieftain. Now it was time to pay for his failure. It was time for him to die. It had taken two long and bloody years of brutal campaigning to bring the wild Chirasai tribe to heel. Roman casualties had been heavy during their guerrilla warfare of hit-and-run fighting. Each new encounter had been more savage and deadly than the last. In the beginning, when defiance burned bright, the chieftain's warriors had been successful. Once, tactics of mass attack and unexpected ambush had thrust them to the cusp of final victory. The ferocious Chirasai warriors had wrong-footed the invading army as they marched through a narrow and heavily wooded defile in their thousands. Unprepared for the sudden onslaught, the Romans couldn't maneuver into battle formation. There was panic in the tightly packed ranks and heavy casualties as the screaming Chirasai crashed into the Romans' extended line and cut them down. At the last moment, through brilliant leadership, General Drusus managed to extricate his trapped army, but the Roman war machine had been badly mauled. Fearing further catastrophe, the wily Roman general withdrew his men from the Chirasai homelands until reinforcements arrived. Smarting from near disaster, Drusus planned his next move more carefully. Having chosen his killing ground well, the general returned and lured Segima and his barbarian horde into a well-baited trap. During the savage fighting that ensued, Segima, their king, was captured, and the highly trained and disciplined Roman legionaries, now with the opportunity to deploy properly, annihilated his fighting elite. The tribe's rout in open battle had been final and decisive. Wounded Chirasai were executed where they lay on the blood-soaked battlefield. Captured warriors and their families became Roman spoils of war. In the grueling weeks that followed, the prisoners were taken by land and sea to the imperial capital, where they were herded through the streets manacled in chains, to the delight of the cheering crowds of Rome. All uncivilized tribes lacking a written language were regarded by Rome as barbarians. As a result of their lowly status, the captives were classified within imperial circles not as human, but simply a valuable commodity like cattle, and absolute property of the state. Once humiliated by public display, the prisoners were stripped of their last vestiges of dignity. They were sold off to the highest bidder in the slave markets. Profits to the imperial treasury swelled as barbarian warriors and their wretched families were torn apart forever. A few of the strongest were bought by the feared gladiator schools, where they would be trained to fight for the entertainment of the common people. Violent death awaited on the bloody sands of gladiatorial arenas scattered throughout the vast Roman Imperium. When bidding was done and coin was paid, flesh was seared with hot iron to display the brand of their new owners. Those deemed unworthy of the schools were taken in chains to a life of exhaustion and thirst, toiling from dawn to dusk in the hot shimmering fields of the Roman countryside. Others were bought to replace unfortunates killed while laboring as beasts of burden, beneath the whips of heartless guards in the hellhole of the stone quarries. The unluckiest of all went to a soulless existence of claustrophobic back-breaking work, digging by flickering torchlight in the deepest bowels of the many mines which honeycombed Rome's seven hills. Some of the young and more attractive Chirasai women were bought and marked by rich masters as playthings or body slaves. Older women were bought for a life of drudgery and menial servitude in large and noble houses. Others were even less fortunate. The women's path would take them to a life of servitude of another kind, in the disease-ridden brothels which abounded every litter-strewn street corner, often nestling beside rowdy taverns in the poorer quarters of Rome. The children were sold off piecemeal to those who wanted them. Huddled against the freezing wind, commander of auxiliary cavalry, Decurio Vitellius settled himself firmly in his saddle beside General Drusus. Staring down at the shackled prisoner with thinly veiled contempt, he reached inside his thick winter cloak, removing the sealed parchment scroll concealed beneath it. The moaning of the wind eased slightly as Decurio Vitellius turned and nodded to one of his armored troopers. Holding his oval shield tightly at his side, the auxiliary trooper tapped sandaled heels against his horse's flanks. The trooper broke ranks with his comrades and walked his horse forward until he was positioned between his general and the decurio. Recruited as an auxiliary from a neighboring German tribe, whose king had seen the wisdom against war and thrown in his lot with Rome several years earlier, the mounted trooper acknowledged his role with a curt salute to his commanders. His tribe were sworn enemies of the Chirasai. He had lost many of his own kin to the never-ending raids and blood feuding between the two warring tribes, and now, like the rest of the mounted escort, he was savoring the bitterness of the Chirasai defeat and their abject and hopeless misery. Vitellius handed the scroll to his general, who broke the hard wax of the imperial seal. He slowly began to unroll it. His cold face betrayed the arrogance of the victor. Why not, General Drusus thought to himself. These filthy animals were not citizens but mere chattels of Rome, beaten and subjugated to the will of his emperor and the imperial senate. The cavalry officer stared for a moment at his trooper, then he said, "You will translate the words of the general." The auxiliary nodded. General Drusus flicked his eyes at the kneeling king before returning his gaze to the opened parchment. Raising his voice above the wind, he cleared his throat and began to read. "On behalf of the Imperial Empire, hear now the illustrious words of our beloved Emperor Gaius Julius Caesar Augustus." Running his tongue over chapped lips, he continued, "We are always deeply saddened by the strife of war, and in particular the recent necessity of crushing the resistance of the Chirasai people. We want only peace within our empire and desire to build strong bonds of friendship with the peoples of our northern lands. We wish to demonstrate the truth of it on this occasion by showing generosity and mercy to those of you who have foolishly raised your hand against us in the past." The general waited as the trooper translated, then continued with the emperor's message. "We have decided that the Chirasai chieftain known as Segima is to be spared the disgrace of public execution. We grant him his life and return to his homeland, where we wish him to become a loyal and trusted friend of Rome and continue as client king of his people." As the trooper translated, Segima's head snapped up in surprise. He had awaited his end after languishing in a Roman jail for almost 2 moons. The last thing he expected when he was dragged from his stinking cell that morning was to be pardoned by the emperor and returned to his people as their king. The mounted escort muttered amongst themselves in incredulous disbelief. How could this be? They had all expected that the Chirasai rebel would be executed by their hands. A growing murmur of outrage and disgust rippled through the surrounding cavalrymen. Decurio Vitellius scowled and stared them all to silence. The Roman general noted with pleasure the confusion on the Chirasai chieftain's face. He also saw the bitter disappointment on the faces of the translator and the Bructeri auxiliaries. After a few moments he continued, "Naturally, there are terms attached to this generous and merciful offer of treaty with the emperor and Rome." Waiting again for the translator to finish, he continued, "Firstly, you will give your sacred covenant that you will never again raise an army against Rome, on pain of immediate forfeiture of your life and lands and the enslavement of your entire tribe." As the wind moaned anew, blowing fresh swirls of snow around him, Segima listened intently to the trooper's translation. With a deep sigh of relief, he locked eyes with Rome's most senior officer in the northern provinces. His prayer had been answered. The gods' favor had returned. Still regarding his prisoner with a cold imperial stare, the general continued, "Second, suitable tithes at a rate set annually will be paid by your people to our tax collectors soon after your harvest has been gathered in, every year." His head bowed again, the Chirasai's leader nodded. "Thirdly, men will be released from your tribe into the service of the Roman army as auxiliaries." With shoulders slumped, there came another sigh followed by another reluctant nod. "You will accept the occupation of your lands by the soldiers of Rome and obey the edicts of the appointed governor of your province, and those officers and administrators under his command." The general began to roll the parchment scroll closed. There was one more clause to the agreement. Drusus knew that for the proud man kneeling before him it would be cruel, perhaps the harshest condition of all. He didn't need to read from the scroll anymore. He had read the last clause in similar treaties before, he knew its words by heart. Decurio Vitellius and the general's horses snorted suddenly as their ears pricked up. Both trampled the frozen ground nervously. Vitellius' skittish horse reared, startled by the mournful howl of a wolf, carried on the winds from the distant snow-covered hills which circled the Chirasai settlement. Vitellius leaned forward and talking softly stroked his animal's neck, gradually calming it. As he straightened, he wondered for a moment if the superstitious barbarians would hear the lone wolf's cry as an omen of good fortune or future evil. No matter, he thought to himself with a smirk, his men knew what to do if his general gave the signal. The barbarian king would accept the treaty, or die where he knelt. Staring at the chained Chirasai before him, with a sly self-satisfied grin, General Drusus delivered the final and most damning part of the agreement. These terms are of course offered subject to immediate agreement, but there is one more clause which is the final and most binding condition to seal this agreement between us. Segimer lowered his head once more. The treaty that Rome offered was harsh, but his life would be spared and his remaining people would survive if he agreed to honor it. Finally, to ensure you loyal cooperation in the future, your firstborn son will be taken as imperial hostage, and sent immediately to Rome. Segimer's head snapped up once again, this time his face reflected a mixture of loathing and heartbreak. His woman suddenly cried out behind him as she wailed her pain and anguish. Irritated by the interruption of the woman's hysterical cries, Vitellius held up his hand to give warning, and still the boy's mother from further displays of grief. Nodding his thanks to the cavalry officer, the general returned to explaining the detail of the final clause. While the boy is hostage, as long as you adhere to the terms of this treaty, your son will be kept in safety and educated as if he were a true Roman nobleman. With a slight condescending nod towards the shackled chieftain, he added, and of course be treated with the respect his father's noble birth deserves. Segimer shuddered. He thought desperately. What could he do? If he refused to accept the terms, execution and no doubt the death of his entire family would be swift and final. He would not even live to see the breakup and enslavement of his people. If he accepted the conditions, he would lose his beloved son. The heir to his throne would be taken away by the hated Roman conquerors. Struggling to rise, Segimer shrugged off the rough hands of his guards. The general raised his hand to stay further restrained by his men. Segimer shook his hair back from his face and, doing his best to restore some dignity, squared himself before the mounted Romans. Segimer stared directly at the trooper sitting on his horse next to the commander of the Roman army. Being king was sometimes a terrible burden, but only one course of action made any sense to him if the Chirasai people were to continue and survive. He had no alternative but to agree. With a contemptuous sneer, he said, "Translate my words carefully, Bructeri dog." His eyes burning with feral hatred, the translator hawked and spat on the ground in front of Segimer. The general and the decurio glared at the trooper. Both knew the hatred which existed between the wild Germanic tribes. Neither man reacted to the insult. In a voice which pierced the winds, Segimer's words rang across the ruined settlement. "I agree to your terms, Roman, but not while I am on my knees. I speak for my people when I give you my word bond to obey this treaty between the Chirasai and the Emperor of Rome." He turned to the huddle of his family behind him and said softly, "Herman, come here to me, my son." A small nervous boy dressed from head to toe in warm skins reluctantly pulled himself from his mother's arms and walked obediently towards his father. He shivered, his face was pale and hot tears ran down his burning cheeks. The boy's thin reed-like voice pleaded and cut through Segimer like a knife. "Please, father, I don't want to go away, I want to stay here with you and Mama." Segimer shook his head. "No, Herman, as my son it is your duty to go with them. One day you will understand, you will return to our lands and be king. It is my command that you will serve your people." Segimer knelt down beside his crying son and hugged him gently. He whispered, "You will keep us all alive by going with these men." Before releasing him, Segimer fixed the boy with a kindly stare and still in a whisper he said, "Go with your father's love, my son, and never forget who you really are. Remember too what I have taught you of our war against the Romans." There was something in his father's eyes that shook the weeping boy. The message was unclear, but something was certainly hidden in his father's words. With the back of his sleeve, Herman wiped away the tears as his father looked back at the two Roman officers. General Drusus' patience was at an end. Agreement was reached, there was no point in further discussion. Coldly he growled, "Enough of this." Angrily he snapped his fingers, "Bring the boy here." One of the auxiliaries grabbed the boy's shoulder and pushed him roughly away from his father towards the general. Unprepared and off balance, Herman slipped on the ice hidden beneath the powdered snow and with a startled cry fell heavily. For a moment the auxiliaries laughed loudly at the child's distress but stopped abruptly as Herman's pet wolfhound leapt forward, snarling and straining against its rope leash. Until now it had laid unnoticed, part covered with snow, silently watching from inside a darkened doorway. It was tied firmly to the door's stout wooden frame. Suddenly alert, with fangs bared it desperately tried to wrench itself free and protect its young master. The beast struggled frantically against its leather collar, snarling and snapping as it tried to launch itself at the nearest dismounted cavalryman. Vitellius had seen enough. He had what he came for, the treaty was sealed and the general and perhaps even the emperor would be pleased with him. The Chirusci would stay on their lands and each year they would pay the high taxes demanded by Rome. Despite his thick cloak he was cold and wanted to start the long ride back to the legion's base quickly. Angrily turning in his saddle he motioned to one of the mounted auxiliaries behind him, then pointed directly at the snarling dog. With a savage grin, the auxiliary understood. He leant forward and withdrew his powerful bow. In a quick practiced movement he notched an iron-barbed arrow. Drawing back the bowstring he took careful aim. Herman yelled a warning but it was futile. With a twang the arrow was released and in a heartbeat flew across the frozen courtyard, plunging through shaggy grey fur into the hound's heaving chest. With an agonized yelp the huge dog fell to the ground. Seeing it fall, with a nod from his commander, one of the legionaries guarding Segimer swaggered with a spreading grin and the ringing laughter of the escort towards the wounded animal. Despite the pooling blood which ran from its mouth and the arrow embedded in its chest the dying hound bared blood-stained teeth and growled weakly at the approaching auxiliary. Almost with contempt the soldier returned the animal's snarl. Laughing, he drew back his muscular arm and drove his long cavalry blade into the dog's exposed throat. The boy screamed. The dog was his oldest friend, and now these terrifying men who served the Romans had killed it. On a signal from General Drusus, Decurio Vitellius walked his horse forward and leaning down snatched up the sobbing boy and dropped him over his horse's broad neck. Holding the boy firmly, he turned his head back towards the general. With a nod of approval the general's face changed abruptly. He roared. Let that be a sound lesson, Segimer, King of the Chirusci. Death is the only reward for defiance of Rome. We hope you enjoyed the first chapter of Eagles of the Damned. Copyright David Black. You can purchase the full incredible story of the destruction of the Roman Army of the North, in Kindle ebook format, or paperback direct from Amazon.